The Katra Podcast, conversations for the curious, essential knowledge simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome. Today, we're diving into, well, a really foundational text for anyone thinking about modern business or marketing. It fundamentally rewired how we think about getting noticed. Seth Godin's Purple Cow.
Oh, yeah. This is one of those books. Once you get the core idea, you see the world differently, especially the world of products and marketing.
Definitely. And we're unpacking this for you because, honestly, whether you're launching something new, managing a team, maybe just trying to make your own career stand out, the old rules, they're just completely broken.
Totally broken. If you feel like you're shouting into the void, just overwhelmed by all the noise out there trying to get attention.
Yeah.
This deep dive, it's kind of the shortcut to understanding maybe the only real way to cut through anymore.
Right. Our mission here is really to dig into why just being very good isn't enough. Why, in today's world, very good is basically the same as being invisible, which is kind of terrifying when you think about it.
It is. And it boils down to this simple but really profound idea. The marketing, the thing that gets you noticed, it has to be built into the product, like baked into the design, the service, the whole experience.
Not just slapped on at the end with a bunch of ads.
Exactly. No. Not an afterthought.
Okay, so let's unpack Seth Godin himself for a minute. Who is this guy, and why does his perspective carry so much weight here?
Well, he's not just some academic theorist, right? He's an entrepreneur. Got his MBA from Stanford, sure, but he was also right there in the trenches.
He saw it happen.
He really did. He was VP of direct marketing at Yahoo. Remember Yoyodyne, his pioneering internet company, Yahoo, bought it. So he literally watched the digital revolution unfold from the inside.
So he witnessed that precise moment when the old way of doing marketing just crumbled because the internet shifted the power, didn't it?
Completely, to consumers.
Yeah.
And his earlier work, permission marketing, that already set the stage. He was saying back then, you need to earn the right to talk to customers. You can't just interrupt them anymore.
Mm.
So his authority, it really comes from seeing that power shift firsthand. Mm. These huge corporations that used to control all the media access.
Right.
Straight into the hands of everyday people. He gets these complex market dynamics and just distills them into these simple, really sticky metaphors.
Yeah.
Like the purple cow.
He's kind of the voice for this new era because he understood that power dynamic change was permanent, irreversible.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it.
Okay, so let's jump into the core idea, the central thesis of Purple Cow. What's he really saying?
He kicks off by saying traditional marketing is basically obsolete. He calls it the TV industrial complex. You know, that old formula. Make a pretty average product, something safe.
Something inoffensive.
Exactly. And then just hammer the public with expensive mass market ads.
Hmm.
That whole loop, it's dead. Finished.
It worked for decades, though. You'd buy the TV ad, that would drive mass demand, which put pressure on retailers to stock your stuff.
Which generated profits.
Which you used to buy more ads. A perfect self-sustaining cycle. For a while.
For a long while. But in today's market, which is just saturated, right, it begs the question. If you can't just buy your way into people's attention, how do you get noticed?
And that's where the purple cow comes in. It's such a perfect metaphor, isn't it? Yeah. You're driving, you see cows, brown cows, black and white cows.
Lots of cows.
After a few minutes, they just blur together, background noise. But then, bam, imagine seeing a purple cow.
You'd slam on the brakes.
You would. You'd stare, you'd take a picture, you'd tell everyone you knew, and that's the goal.
So the purple cow, it's that product or service that's so different, so new, so exciting, so, well, remarkable.
Love it.
That it just stands out naturally from all the boring brown cows.
And it doesn't just make you want to buy it. It makes you want to talk about it.
Yes. And this is where the strategy really flips on its head. Godin says the riskiest thing, the absolute most dangerous thing a company can do today is be boring. Play it safe.
It feels so backward, doesn't it? That doing the standard safe thing is now the biggest gamble.
It really does. But his point is, the goal isn't to advertise a finished product anymore. It's to design a product that advertises itself because it's just that remarkable.
So remarkability has to be part of R&D, part of the core design, not just, you know, a budget line for the marketing department later.
Exactly. It becomes everyone's job. The engineer, the designer, the customer service person.
Yeah.
Everyone has to think, is what we're making actually worth talking about?
Because if it isn't, doesn't matter how much money you throw at ads, you're just invisible.
Invisible.
Yeah. Okay, let's dig into the book's structure a bit. Godin sort of lays it out in stages. First, the diagnosis, the death of that TV industrial complex.
Right. And why did it die? He points to two main things, clutter and consumer empowerment.
The clutter part is obvious, right? We are just bombarded with messages nonstop. TV, phones, social media, streaming, everywhere.
Everywhere. And we've gotten really good at ignoring it.
Yeah.
We have the tools like ad blockers, the skip button.
Sure.
But also just the mindset. We're cynical. We tune it out. And the media landscape itself is so fragmented now, you can't just buy one big ad and reach everyone anymore. Those days are long gone.
So the big takeaway from this first part, the diagnosis, is really stark. Creating that safe, average, middle-of-the-road product, that brown cow, is the riskiest thing you can do. Because it absolutely guarantees you'll be invisible, you try to appeal to everybody, and you end up really connecting with nobody.
Precisely. So having laid out the problem, Godin then says, okay, the only way forward is through remarkability, being that purple cow.
And this brings us to how these remarkable ideas actually spread. It's not just hoping people talk, it's about kind of engineering the conversation.
Right, and he introduces three really key concepts here that work together. First is the idea virus.
The idea virus.
Yeah, the idea itself has to be designed to spread organically from person to person, like a virus, but, you know, a good one. The purple cow product or service, that's the catalyst for the idea virus.
Okay, so the idea spreads, but who spreads it?
Ah, that's the second concept. The sneezers. These are your key carriers, your early adopters, maybe influencers, tastemakers. The people whose opinions matter in a particular circle.
They're the ones who catch the idea virus first and then, well, sneeze it onto others.
Exactly. When they talk about something new and cool, people in their network listen. They pay attention. They often act on it.
But how do you find these sneezers? It's not like they wear a sign, right?
No, definitely not.
Yeah.
And a sneezer isn't always like a celebrity or a big shot CEO. It could be anyone who's just really passionate and knowledgeable about a specific area.
Okay.
Think about, let's say you're launching some new high-tech gadget. Your sneezers might be the tech bloggers, the forum moderators, the people who beta test everything.
The super users.
The super users? Exactly.
Yeah.
Or if it's gourmet cooking ingredients, it's the food bloggers, the chefs, maybe that one friend everyone asks for restaurant recommendations.
Mm-hmm.
You target the passion and the engagement, not just status.
Got it. So you have the idea virus spread by the sneezers. What's the third piece?
The third and maybe the most interesting is otaku.
Otaku, Japanese term.
Yeah, it refers to people with this really intense, almost obsessive passion for a specific niche. Your true fanatics, your hyper enthusiasts.
Okay.
And what's really fascinating is Godin says, don't aim for the masses first. Aim for the otaku. Intentionally create something for that small, passionate group.
Why? That seems counterintuitive if you want big success.
Because if you can truly delight the otaku, you create this incredibly loyal, vocal, highly engaged fan base. They become your evangelists.
Ah, so they become your most powerful sneezers, essentially.
Pretty much. They'll spread the word with incredible passion. He argues the path to mass success actually runs through these niche groups first. Create intense love in a small group rather than just mild interest in a big one.
Okay, that makes sense. So how do we actually make something remarkable? How do we build this purple cow?
This is where he gets practical. His main advice, go for the edges.
Go for the edges, meaning not the middle.
Exactly. The safe middle ground. That's where everyone else is. It's crowded. It's boring. Remarkability, he says, lives at the extremes.
Like what?
The fastest, the cheapest, the most luxurious, the most specialized, the simplest, the most complex. Pick an edge, some dimension, and push it. Own it completely.
So you can't be like the cheapest and the most luxurious.
Probably not. That usually leads back to mediocrity, right? Trying to be all things to all people.
Mm-hmm.
He suggests you need to choose your edge. Are you going to be remarkable on price, on service, on design, on speed? Pick one and excel.
That raises a question, though. What about the big companies? The huge established players, this whole idea of being niche, being edgy, doesn't that feel incredibly risky for a giant corporation that needs predictable mass market sales? Is this advice mainly for startups?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And Godin tackles it head-on. He argues the risk calculation is flipped. The real risk now is launching another boring brown cow product because that's almost guaranteed to fail in the long run.
So the calculated risk of trying for a purple cow, even though it feels scary,
is actually the only path to sustainable growth, even for big companies. It takes courage, absolutely. But the alternative is slow decline.
And he also points out remarkability doesn't have to be just the core product feature.
Yeah, absolutely not. That's key. It can come from anywhere in the experience. The business model itself, think Netflix killing Blockbuster by changing how we get movies, not the movies themselves initially.
Right. Or customer service Zappos is the classic example. They made buying shoes online, which seemed risky, into this amazing talkable service experience.
And my favorite example, which you mentioned in the outline, is the Dutch Boy paint can.
Ah, yes, the paint can.
Paint is paint. Pretty much a commodity. For 100 years, paint came in those awful metal cans you needed a screwdriver to pry open, made a mess.
Total pain.
Total pain. Dutch Boy didn't invent better paint. They reinvented the can. A square plastic container, easy screw-off lid, built-in pour spout. Simple.
But revolutionary for anyone who's ever painted a room.
Exactly. They solved a huge, decades-old customer frustration. They took a massive gamble retooling their whole manufacturing and supply chain for this new packaging.
Just for the container.
Just for the container. And it made their commodity product totally remarkable. People talked about the can.
Which means the organization has to start measuring different things too, right? Not just sales numbers.
Yeah, you need to track the buzz. Word of mouth, customer passion, how far the idea is spreading, those become critical metrics.
Okay, so the strategy makes sense. But then there's the execution. And Godin says the biggest hurdle often isn't a lack of ideas.
It's a lack of courage. Organizational fear.
What kind of fear?
Well, two main kinds. First, the fear of criticism. If you make something truly different, truly remarkable, some people won't like it. Some might even hate it.
Right. You can't please everyone if you're aiming for an edge.
Exactly. And that desire to be universally liked, or at least not actively disliked, that pushes companies right back towards blandness. Towards the safe, invisible middle.
And the other fear.
The fear of failure, especially inside big organizations. Creating a purple cow often involves experimentation, trying things that might not work. And many large companies have cultures that punish failure, even small ones.
They prefer predictability, the factory mindset, he calls it, which kills innovation.
Kills it dead. And this leads to another danger, complacency. Even if you do create a purple cow, you can't just sit back.
Because it won't stay purple forever.
Nope. Which leads to what he calls the cycle of the cow. Create a purple cow, milk it for profits while it's remarkable, but immediately start working on inventing the next purple cow. Because eventually, your first one will become the new standard, the new brown cow. Others will copy it.
Wow, that sounds exhausting. You launch a huge success, and the very next day, you have to start thinking about how to make it obsolete yourself.
It's a relentless cycle. It requires building an organization that's designed to constantly fight inertia and embrace change. Not easy.
Okay, so pulling this all together, if we zoom out, what are the big overarching themes here? The core messages that really shift your thinking?
I think there are three huge ones. First, and we keep coming back to this, safe is the new risky.
Right. Trying to blend in, aiming for the comfortable middle, chasing mass appeal with something mediocre, that's the most dangerous strategy now. Because boring is invisible.
Totally. Just think about the last time you consciously ignored a generic ad online or skipped a pre-roll video. That's why you can't rely on that anymore. That middle ground is where the fiercest, most pointless competition happens.
Okay, theme one, safe is risky. What's number two?
The product is the marketing. Or maybe the experience is the marketing. It's not just about promoting something after it's built. Marketing has become an active invention.
Meaning if the product, the service, the story itself isn't compelling enough to get people talking on its own,
then no amount of advertising dollars can save it. It fundamentally fails. Which means, like we said, everyone, designers, engineers, support staff, they're all part of the marketing effort now, whether they realize it or not.
Okay. And the third big theme?
Target the niche, not the masses. At least, not initially. The road to broad success, paradoxically, runs through specialized, passionate groups first.
The sneezers and the otaku.
Exactly. Focus all your energy on delighting them, on creating something they absolutely love. Get that small, intense group buzzing, and trust them to carry the message to the wider market. Intense passion in a few beats mild interest in many.
That really does flip the old mass marketing model on its head.
Completely.
You know, the book is also full of these really punchy, memorable lines, little nuggets that stick with you.
Oh, definitely. Godin's great at that.
Want to share a couple of key ones?
Sure. How about this one, which perfectly nails the core problem. In a crowded marketplace, fitting in is failing.
Simple. Direct. If you don't stand out, you literally don't exist to the consumer. That forces the need for the purple cow.
Right. And then there's the strategic response. Safe is risky.
That's the really counterintuitive one, isn't it? The one that challenges our instincts. Embracing that calculated risk, daring to be different, that's the only truly safe path forward now.
It forces you to completely reevaluate what risk even means in business today.
Yeah. And one more.
How about this one? Challenging how companies are structured. Marketing is too important to be left to the marketing department.
Yeah. That really drives home that remarkability isn't a function you outsource. It has to be in the company's DNA, built into everything.
Everyone owns it.
So let's make this practical. How can someone listening apply these ideas, whether they're starting a business or maybe just thinking about their own career path?
Okay, for entrepreneurs, the message is clear. Don't even try to compete with the big guys on their turf, especially on ad spending. You can't win that game.
So be the purple cow instead.
Exactly. Look at the JetBlue example again. They jumped into airlines about as commoditized and boring a market as you can get, right?
It's a terrible industry historically.
Awful. They couldn't afford massive ad campaigns like the legacy carriers. So what did they do? They built remarkability into the experience. Individual TVs at every seat, which was huge then. Leather seats, friendly service, competitive prices.
Things that people noticed and talked about.
Massively. They generated enormous word-of-mouth buzz that money couldn't buy just by being remarkably better in a few key areas customers actually cared about.
Okay, so that's for entrepreneurs. What about product developers? People actually designing the stuff?
Look beyond just adding more features. Think about the entire user experience. Think about friction points. That Dutch boy paint can is the perfect lesson.
Right. Don't just improve the paint. Fix the annoying can.
Yes. They didn't change the core product, the paint. They solved a huge nagging customer pain point with the packaging. That made a mundane product suddenly memorable and talkable. Find those points of friction and ask, can we make this remarkable?
And what about for us as individuals? Personal branding, careers?
Same principle applies. Don't just have a standard resume, a generic LinkedIn profile, a brown cow career that looks like everyone else's.
Become a purple cow yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By developing a unique combination of skills, by mastering a rare niche, by doing work that is so exceptionally good or different or valuable in a specific way that you become memorable.
You stand out from the pile.
You stand out. And you have to be willing sometimes to be misunderstood or to niche down in a way that feels risky if you want to build that kind of remarkable career.
Interesting. You know, wrapping up, what surprised me most rereading this or thinking about it now is kind of the sense of liberation it offers.
How so?
It gives you permission to not try and please everyone, to focus your energy on delighting a smaller group who will really appreciate what you do, and to trust them to spread the word.
Yeah, it lets go of that pressure for universal appeal.
Exactly. It replaces the maybe false comfort of the old formulas with the much more exciting, maybe messier challenge of doing something genuinely new and different. It lets you ignore the critics who just don't get it because they aren't your target audience anyway.
That's a great point. And for me, connecting it back, the biggest final takeaway is just how fundamentally the game has changed. Marketing isn't just about shouting louder anymore. It's shifted irrevocably from being an act of promotion
to being an act of invention, creation.
Exactly. And the most valuable lesson, maybe the most important one for anyone in business today, is that the only path that's truly safe in the long run is the one that looks the most risky.
The path of being different.
Being different, being daring, being well. Absolutely remarkable. It forces us to stop asking, okay, how do we sell this thing we made?
And instead ask the much harder, a much more important question.
Is this thing we made actually worth selling? Is it worth talking about?
A much deeper question. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.